Four brave adventurers traveled into the unknown and came back with fantastic powers, thereafter calling themselves Pretty Much Pop Culture Podcast. Today, talking about the Fantastic Four characters created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby in 1961 in light of the new Marvel film Fantastic Four, First Steps. This is Mark Linsenmeyer, often referred to as a child as the ever-loving Thing.
This is Al Baker, a low-budget podcast host brought in to retain the rights.
This is Sarah Lynn Breck, and hey, Mark, I'm confused. I thought we were the Fantastic Four.
This is Lawrence Ware, and do you know what would happen if Snoop Dogg joined the Fantastic Four? The Thing wouldn't be the only one that was stoned.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Did you expect more goofy humor in this film?
Like the kind I just gave? Like what I just did?
Yes. That the Fantastic Four seems an inherently silly property. That even changing Mr. Fantastic's power so he can jump around like stretchy Spider-Man Yoda, flipping this way and that way, and never a comment upon it. Never a comment about how silly or just playing on the inherent hilarity available in the visage of the Thing. I don't know. There's something about as repelled as I was by Chris, the previous iteration of the Flame Boy.
Chris Evans.
Yeah. Actually, Michael B. Jordan was the immediately previous guy. Man,
I'm saying Chris Evans, as annoying as he was in that film, at least seemed to convey the joie de vivre of that character in a way that I didn't see the Michael B. Jordan one recently. I saw it like within the last 3 years, so I didn't bother to rewatch it, but I watched the old ones. Yeah. Despite all that little niggling, I did enjoy the new movie. Maybe not quite as much as the Superman that we just reviewed, but, you know, it had nice 60s. I'm just a sucker for those nicely, especially retrofuturism, but really anything superheroes put in the 90s even, like, right? The Ms. Marvel, I kind of like that aspect.
So this Fantastic Four First Steps, the new movie, is a huge triumph of low expectations because it's fine. It's great. I had a good time watching it. But what was really striking to me when I was trying to think of what I thought about it is that this film had a real low bar to clear, maybe lower than any other film that I've seen this year, because we're all pretty much sick of superhero movies. We're all very tired of superhero movies. And there has never been a good Fantastic Four movie.
Never? Oh my gosh. Oh my.
I really like the Roger Corman movie, but I expected you to disagree with me about that. But like, there's never been like an objectively good Fantastic Four movie. And this film cleared both of those things handily. It was a perfectly fine time. Some stuff I really, really liked. I thought the tone was really fun. The retro-futurist aesthetic was great. Those are the things that I enjoyed. Oh, and I thought Galactus was genuinely scary. That was a really cool bit of CGI villain making. Those are my favorite things about the film. Everything else I thought was just fine. But the Fantastic Four are a really interesting bunch of characters for how beloved they are versus how little really very good media there is featuring them.
Yeah, I wondered why they haven't had more success, or maybe I'm just coming from a place where I don't really care about the Fantastic Four. And so I went to see this movie almost kicking and screaming, and I thought it was fine. I thought it was fun. I liked the look of it. The story I thought was super silly and stupid, but maybe that was the whole point. It was supposed to be silly. I thought the tone actually was kind of all over the place. I wasn't sure how seriously we were supposed to take these characters. And I actually wasn't really sure with Mr. Fantastic. Isn't he supposed to be like a big nerd or something? I felt like Pedro Pascal was just terribly miscast in this role. Even though I generally like him as an actor, I wasn't really sure about him in this role. I thought everybody else did fine. But I really wanted to see where, for Marvel nerds, where this kind of falls in the however many movies there are. What are there, like 37 of them or something like that that are out? Like, where this kind of falls? Like, is this like top tier kind of Marvel, or is this B level? I don't know. But in the end, I thought it was fine. I thought it was pretty fun. But I don't know if I'll be watching the sequel.
Let go, Lawrence. Were you a FF Comics reader?
Yes, of course I was. Black Panther first appeared in the Fantastic Four, and I owned that copy of that edition. All right, listen. There is no Marvel without the Fantastic Four. It would not exist. Marvel is absolutely dependent upon the Fantastic Four. And they have struggled to bring the Fantastic Four to the movie screen because they're such a weird Star Trek adjacent kind of group of individuals. It is really, really science fiction-y. Not quite hard sci-fi, but definitely sci-fi. And so they've struggled trying to find the right tone to bring them to the screen. This movie, I have quibbles. We'll get to that. I completely, 100%, absolutely disagree with Al that there has never been a good Fantastic Four movie. I would argue that the Fantastic Four movie that came out in 2005 is very decent. It's not bad. It's not like they've all been terrible. And it did well enough to spawn a sequel in 2007 about the rise of the Silver Surfer with Lawrence Fishburne. The Roger Corman film, actually, I kind of like quite a bit, actually, Al. But that's my weird sensibilities. Anyway, Fantastic Four, central Marvel characters. Marvel really spins out of the Fantastic Four. Like, everything that comes thereafter, it starts with the Fantastic Four. They've always struggled bringing it to the screen. We can get into this particular film. I think it's too short. I think the tone is all over the place. I think that Pedro Pascal could have been good. But one of the things that he does well is he shows the undercurrent of darkness with him, which is very important for the Fantastic Four because he's going to eventually become a villain, a very important villain in the Marvel Universe. Like, all this stuff is kind of swirling around this film. But I think that what Al said is absolutely right, right after he said something terribly wrong, that this film absolutely exceeded very low expectations. It's very good. Is it great? No. Sarah? It's probably B tier. It's not C tier. It's very fine. It's very watchable. It's very digestible. You get in, you get out. It's under 2 hours. Pretty decent effects. I think that the stretchy effects could have been a little bit better. But I will not stand by and allow you guys to slander the Fantastic Four on a podcast that I have dedicated years of my life to. That will not happen.
That 2005 movie, I actually did see, I watched that. And oofa, I have to disagree, Lawrence. That movie is...
It's a product of its time.
It really suffers in comparison with like that first crop of runaway Marvel movies as well. Because like, if you've got Iron Man coming out around the same time, that Fantastic Four movie just doesn't seem like it.
Well, it's not around the same time. So Iron Man comes out, I think, 5 years... So this is before all this stuff. It's a product of its time.
And still, even compared to Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 1 and 2, it's definitely a step down.
It struggles, yeah, definitely.
So that said, I enjoyed those two movies. And actually, a year and a half ago, whenever I saw the 2015 one, I thought it was fine. I had really low expectations because that is sort of what... You know, what is a superhero movie supposed to do? And almost all of them do it well enough for me. We talked about Marvels on here. That is a pretty uniformly panned movie. And we thought it was fine. It had, you know, problems with too much going on or whatever.
Didn't love it. But yeah, it was fine. It was fine.
So to have the attitude with First Steps, it was fine. When, I mean, I got to say, by comparison to those other fines, I thought so much more went into this. I really appreciated quite a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, like on a sort of second-for-second cinematic basis. Even just the first thing that I had heard, the Roger Ebert review or the 2005 one before I saw it, or some critic saying, when Chris Evans first reveals his flaming powers, shouldn't he be screaming in terror? Can you just acknowledge something of how... It's just asking us to believe in pure fantasy, like, ba-doom, Shazam, oh, I'm an adult, I'm running around. Like, even the movie Shazam did a much better job in showing the sort of big, like, transformation of the boy into the man and how freaked out he would be and how, you know, how much you could have fun with that. And the Fantastic Four just did, the original one just did none of that. Of course, in this one, again, yeah, I want to see what you guys thought in comparison. Al, you didn't like Superman's just showing us on screen, and you said a person should be telling us this. Well, as if served up to order, Mark Gatiss, the talk show host, tells us the backstory. Did you find that more satisfying?
Yeah, as opposed to a text dump. And I was thinking, I do really like, just in general, the strategy of these movies now of essentially pre-seeing the origin movie in the first 10-15 minutes of the movie that you're making. And then essentially, like, both Superman and this Fantastic Four movie both feel like second movies in a trilogy. Like, they're not bothering mm-hmm. with the origin story. And I really like that confidence now to just say, look, we all know these stories. You can catch everybody up very, very quickly and set everything up the way you want to. It did, in this case, highlight one of the shortcomings of the movie to me, which is the characterization just wasn't really there for the main characters for me. There were hints at it, but it's such an important part of the Fantastic Four story that you have to tell. Like, there's this completely obvious dramatic irony that their superpowers are like dark mirrors of troubling aspects of their personality, which is just the kind of the obvious thing that you have to do with the Fantastic Four. And if you're going to skip over the origin portion of the movie where you establish that, you really have to do a bit more work than I think they did to establish the characterizations of the Fantastic Four. They did a little bit for all of them, but none of them felt like terribly coherent. And they're all like big, broad characters. You don't have to be very subtle with them. So it was a bit, it was weird to me that they felt flat. Maybe in an effort to avoid being two dimensional, they went a little bit too far the other way.
Part of the reason why I like this sort of coming in media res is that what I thought this particular film did well is that they all seem like they had relationships with each other. And I know that a big thing.
They're a family.
Right. Yeah. They're a family. And it felt very family-like. And I really appreciated that that was from the get-go. From the first minute, we knew that these, all four of these people really, really adored each other and didn't get along sometimes and had arguments and all of those things that families do. And I really, really like that. And what I noticed from the 2005 movie was just like what you said, Mark, it was like, oh, all of a sudden I can burst into flames. And that was not really a thing. But the thing, actually, his beloved wife decided that she no longer wanted to be married to him anymore. So it was this weird sort of contrast. One bursting into flames, not a big deal. But the thing, who is now made out of rocks, that is something that he really needs to process. And he takes a lot of time in that movie processing it. And I saw that movie after I had watched First Steps. And I really liked that the thing in First Steps was just like, yeah, this is just who I am. I'm comfortable in my rock skin. And maybe I'll get the nice Jewish teacher at the end, you know?
But that's not how the thing is in the comics. All right, look. I'm really struggling here. I mean, because the 2005 movie, I have an affinity for it. It's directed by a black filmmaker, Tim Story. The second one is directed by a black filmmaker. So I have an affinity for it. I want to stand up for it. Mm-hmm. It is a product of his time. It is not a great movie. It is a product of his time. Absolutely. It is reflective of the kind of movies that were superhero films. Like, you have to remember, like, Daredevil and freaking Elektra. Like those movies are just, they're not good. But of the crop, this one is decent. Now, Sam Raimi is on a whole different playing field. Like, Sam Raimi is Sam Raimi. And outside of Spider-Man 3, Sam Raimi is going to do something interesting. Even the most recent Marvel film, I think it was Doctor Strange Into the Mouth of Madness or something like that. Into the Mouth of Madness. Whatever. Into the Mouth of Madness is a John Carpenter film. Anyway, but the Doctor Strange film, even that one, I have quibbles with it, but that's Sam Raimi. And he brings something always visually interesting, narratively interesting, the kind of comedic beats that he's able to kind of do. He always brings that, and also something kind of horrifying. So he's good at that. Now, this film is, as I said, very, very fine. It is not great. It's fine. I love the family dynamics. I think Sarah is right about that. They nail that. And that's always been a central part of the Fantastic Four, is that they are not a team. They are a family. They're going to quibble. They're going to fight. They're going to disagree about things. But at the end of the day, they may roll their eyes. They may be irritated. They may not like each other, but they're going to be a family and do what families do. And so I think this film did a good job of that. Honestly, this film, if you step back and look at the filmmaking, it is extremely beautiful, the cinematography of the film. It is so much better than it has any right to be. Mm-hmm. Like, most Marvel films are flat. There's no depth of vision, really. This film, the retro feel of it is really well done. The cinematography is well done. The camera moves. The direction, I think, could have been better, but that might have been because this is a guy who's been doing TV for a while. But I thought it was good. And I thought that the undercurrents of the characters, like the reason why you don't get that, this is how we become the Fantastic Four, is because there's been many films that do that. Like, you know, how many times do you need to see Batman become Batman? Or how many times do you need to see these superheroes become who they are? Like, it's kind of in the background now. And so if they had done that, this would have been a terrible film. And so I think that this being in the background, them kind of highlighting that they are the like rock stars of their world, very well done. That is very much in keeping with what the Fantastic Four should have always been on screen. So I loved all those different things. Now, I think Galactus was fine. I thought he was scary. I didn't love his character design, honestly. I thought that the Silver Surfer has always been a conflicted character. I thought that was captured very well. And the ending was a wonderful kind of... I don't know what people want from Marvel films, honestly. Are you looking for Rashomon? Are you looking for the Seven Samurai? Are you looking for a superhero film? Like, what are you looking for? Because this film does what it needs to do. Is it great? No. Is it good? It is perfectly good. It is perfectly fine. And so I just kind of meet it on its own terms. And instead of bringing my big, you know, philosopher critic brain to it and expect more of it, I accept what it gives me. If it fails, I will say what it fails on. But this gives me what I need. I'm interested in where it's going to go.
All right, we got to stop for an ad break. And I want to start by telling you about another podcast. If you're wondering whether you're right or wrong to love movies from your childhood, That Aged Well is the podcast for you. Hosted by comedians and pop culture superfans Paul and Erica, this show revisits 80s and 90s movies and TV shows with hilarious, unfiltered commentary and the kind of honest reflection that sneaks up on you right between the laughs. So they've done some things that we've covered on this podcast, like the 1996 Mission Impossible movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark, The Matrix, but a full episode solely on the film Batman and Robin, All About Eve. You probably have not thought recently about the film Jumpin' Jack Flash. They seem to have a little Whoopi Goldberg thing going on. You've even delved into music videos like Physical by Olivia Newton-John. These two crazy kids love pop culture and know how to make it fun. You'll love That Aged Well if you love our show. Tune into That Aged Well where you're listening to us.
Hi, I'd like to talk about Masterclass. One of the first classes I took was on the runner's mindset, taught by Joan Benoit Samuelson, who is a champion long-distance runner. I'm also a long-distance runner, and I found her story inspiring and motivating. I loved how her lessons could be applied to both beginner and experienced runners. I found this inclusiveness across so many classes on the Masterclass platform. No matter where the member is in their learning, Masterclass can meet them where they are. With Masterclass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With Masterclass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. Apply improv to your daily life with Amy Poehler. Develop your singular voice with Mindy Kaling. And learn to tell a story that persuades people with Michael Lewis. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch Masterclass. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. Right now, our listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/pretty. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/pretty. Masterclass.com/pretty.
I know that a foundational thing, right, in Stan Lee creating the Fantastic Four and then going on to create Spider-Man and things like that.
And Jack Kirby.
Yes, but just what he describes as his idea is we're going to have these people dealing with normal, everyday problems. They're going to be people. That Superman is not a person. He, you know, we can dress up. We can, even with the 1978 Superman film, like, well, let's try to have him show a little more of his interaction in the office or whatever. But we're going to try to make these people relatable. Was there room in this format to do that much at all. Like, there was a little bit, like, okay, they're dealing with pregnancy.
There's a parent stuff, but honestly, not really. And I think that has more to do with the runtime. Like, the runtime is relatively short, and they're trying to do a lot to set up, because the Fantastic Four is supposed to be setting up where they're going with Doomsday and all these other kind of things. Mm. And so I just don't think they had the time to really kind of zero in on that. Like, there was a little bit of that with the Thing and trying to kind of fall in love a little bit, and a little bit of that with the pregnancy, but not much more than that, I don't think.
You're screwed earlier, Lawrence. You're absolutely right. Like, you don't expect Rashomon from a Fantastic Four movie. But what you hope for, I think, is something that does meet your expectations, but also is elevated in some form by, like, some series of choices that the filmmakers are making. And you do feel the lack in exactly that. It is a confusing choice to have such a short runtime when there are some things that feel like they're missing from the story. And particularly in characterization, like, the only thing I think that I really felt like I was missing is really, because you're absolutely right to point this out, Sarah, you do get a really clear sense that this group of people is a family, but you just don't quite get enough of what for each of them is their primary drive and their primary fear. You get one or the other from most of them, but you don't get both. I don't think you get both from any of them. Because that primary emotional tension is what gives the audience the buy-in that you want them to have for the last moment of the film. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, but when Johnny Storm has his moment towards the end where he's gearing up to make a big sacrifice.
Right, and he dies.
Yeah, when he dies.
Since you're spoiling. We're spoiling now.
It was a pretty good, compelling moment, but there was room for it to work even better if we'd had just another scene or two where we'd set up more clearly the conflict of, like, Johnny's, I don't know, selfishness, need for recognition, whatever it is that's driving him forward. The choice of the core tension with involving, like, the baby and the whole Rumpelstiltskin plot, in a way that works well for me, but in a way it's a kind of cheat, because you don't need to know anything about the emotional character of a pair of parents to understand that they're not going to want to give their child up to a galaxy-eating monster god.
You know, I had been thinking about who this movie is for.
It's me. It's for me.
It's for you. How Marvel has been kind of trying to course correct. So many of their movies became just for the hardcore Marvel fans. And it left a lot of people like me out who might be interested in going. But it turned out, no, I was not going to go. But this movie, it seemed like part of their marketing plan was that you don't have to know anything about this in order to be able to understand this movie, be able to understand the plot of what's going on and who these characters are, which I did appreciate. And you don't have to study up beforehand to understand the plot of the movie. And I think that's kind of a big shift. And as they move forward, I do wonder if they're going to kind of keep this movie is like very grounded in a way, because we do have four sort of human characters. They're not from another planet. And you do have, you know, someone who's coming, you know, they have one thing to do. They have one, you know, they're not trying to, well, I guess they are trying to save the world in this case, but they have one particular job, if that makes sense. Like, it's very, very focused rather than having all of these other things that they need to do. Does that make sense?
Yes. I think that if they're going to have a reasonable runtime, if it's going to be a movie and not a TV show, then pursuing this. And I'm surprised you described the plot, Sarah, as merely silly, because it does give you sort of a Sophie's Choice sort of thing.
It absolutely does. And I found that very ethically compelling, honestly. Like, that's a very interesting choice that they have to make there.
Yeah, interested what people thought of the sort of key scene where she goes out and she somehow convinces the crowd not to turn on them, that, you know, the obvious ethical choice of giving up a single child to save the universe. Mm-hmm. I think a better argument would have been, okay, here's my confession. I drifted off for about 2 minutes in when they were actually visiting with Galactus. So I don't know did Galactus tell them, I want this child to be my replacement, or did he just tell the Silver Surfer that?
No, they knew that he wanted the child for some grand nefarious cosmic purpose. But I don't know if they knew necessarily that he was going to put the child in his place.
They didn't know the details of it, but he talked about how this child is very, very powerful, which he's going to be very powerful, and how this child is very powerful, and there's like a lot of potential there, and he wanted that to satiate his hunger.
Here's an argument you could make to the people, which is this being wants my child because he's going to be super powerful. If we betray this child by giving him into the service of this, do you want to be responsible for him coming back here in 20 years and eating the planet anyway? There's too many unknowns in this. We can't give the bad guy what he wants. You know, that's just basic ethics. You don't. So in other words, argue Kantianism over utilitarianism. Utilitarianism, there's too much. You don't know if it's actually going to produce a greater good in the long run to give this child up. But you do know that you're helping the bad guy with his bad thing if you do it.
But I just don't understand why they just blindly believed this monster. I don't understand why they're like, why they just accepted his offer. Just they're like, oh yeah, okay, that's, you're making the rules. Sure. I just didn't understand that.
All the information they have is like the Silver Surfer turning up and making threats. And then they go and see Galactus. And yeah, Galactus is super intimidating, but you don't know that he can do anything yet. You're right, that is kind of weird.
But wait a minute. We're talking about comic books, guys. Like that is what all the comic books do. Like, if you look at any comic book film, that is the kind of interaction. The villain will say something, and the characters kind of get motivated to respond to what the villain... Like, I think Galactus had did enough.
He's lawful neutral, or lawful evil. He's not chaotic evil.
The usual the bog standard interaction in the movie is that the villain will, like, blow up the White House or something, do something to show that they have...
Correct. That they have that power.
But they established, remember that Reed did the research and he realized that he had eaten all these planets.
Oh, they did see a planet that he had eaten. That's,
yeah,
that's true.
So,
that
so that's
true.
Been established. That's been that's established.
Fair. That's fair.
I think you guys are hard on this film. I think you guys are just really hard on this film.
I'm going to show up to the White House and say, I'm going to destroy the planet unless you give me your son. They'll be like, okay.
They knew that he had been eating planets. Come on, guys.
But why would they believe him if they say, oh, okay, so if I hand over my son, you won't eat this planet? Like, why would they believe that?
Yeah, he would, but then all he would make good has on to say deal. Is that, like, you've got no choice but to trust me.
I mean, that's honestly, like, they had no choice but to trust him. They had no choice.
That having set up the Rumpelstiltskin plot, it was, maybe I also drifted off for a couple of minutes because it really felt like that wasn't paid off properly. It was that there's, oh my God, Sophie's choice. But then very quickly we come up with a plan whereby we get to have it both ways. And then Magic Baby saving the day felt a little cheap. Yeah. Having set up this kind of tension, it felt like I was hoping for a cleverer way to pay it off. Although I don't know if there is a clever way to pay it off. Mark's advanced, like, turn it into an advanced negotiation strategy.
I mean, that's a superhero film issue, though. If you look back at many, many superhero films, the setup is always really interesting and the payoff is always terrible. Like, even Black Panther, the conflict was interesting. The last third of that film is not very good. Like, it's that is a superhero issue. And so I think that this kind of falls into a traditional pattern of an interesting, because I will fight you guys on this. I think that ethical dilemma is really, really interesting.
No, I think it's great. It felt really epic to me. It felt like a really cool story point.
But the payoff isn't very good. And I'm okay with that because that's what I expect from these films.
But there were so many things about it. One of the things that I thought was so silly about it was, like, Pedro Pascal is playing the smartest person in the world. And his speech in front of all of the journalists and stuff, like, was so dumb. I was like, you need a publicist.
That felt like a human speech. That felt like a human speech. That felt human. That's what that felt like. It felt like a guy who came across something because he is so arrogant. Like, that's the backdrop of this guy. He's arrogant because he's so intelligent. And he came across something that is far more difficult to figure out than he's able to figure out. And he's coming to the realization, I don't have the answer here. And that's how I read that. And maybe it's me having the back, like, the knowledge of the comics and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But that's how I read that scene, as him come across something that is too difficult for him to figure out.
Yeah.
And he has to say, I do not know what to do here. I don't have the answer. That's how I read that scene.
In one of the comics that I looked at was somebody saying, the scariest thing that I've ever heard is Reed Richards saying, "I don't know." So they could have like had somebody sort of inflate that moment.
That would have helped it.
But the movie had been too short. There wasn't anything to establish like, okay, we know he like goes on a science TV show for kids. That's what he does in his spare time. We know because maybe he has so much mental power. It is nice that, again, we talked about this kind of last time in terms of, is Superman in the world alone or is he there with the Justice Gang, with other forces? Having these guys alone, it does make it actually believable that like people might just go along with their crazy plans because he has given them single-handedly, or they have given them things to make it a technical utopia. I looked at this other comic book, a limited series called Fantastic Four, The End. The premise of it is just that the whole world has all this space stuff. It has, because, yeah, you've got a super genius who can create stuff. It's basically like having aliens come and give you a bunch of technology. That it you can't just have the world remain unchanged apart from people getting saved on the street when the Fantastic Four go into action. They're not the A-team. He should be a world-changing genius.
And I think that what this film suffers from, because a lot of the criticism I'm hearing from Sarah is just that we did not have enough time to have all that kind of fleshed out for us. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy that we got a film that is short, but the shortness is shortcutted. See what I did there? The shortness shortcutted. Sarah, that was funny. That was funny. What I did was funny. Laugh at me.
Anyway, the shortness is shortcutted.
I want the world to know that I am giving Sarah the finger, but she can't see it because I respect her too much. But the point is that the film just needed more time. It needed more room to breathe, to lay out that Reed Richards is very arrogant. Like, that's what leads him to become the Maker. He's very arrogant. And that arrogance is part of why him saying what he said in that moment was supposed to hit different. They just didn't lay that out. And honestly, I think that a little bit more time with Galactus would have helped a little bit, just to kind of lay out another scene with Galactus, kind of laying out that Sophie's choice, if you will, right? I just think that we needed more time. And I get that they wanted to make it a short film because a lot of these films started kind of become bloated and overlong, but this film just needed more time. And if they had...
Can I tell you, I looked at the comics for how they defeat Galactus. And it is sillier. So here, the Deus Ex Machina is the Watcher.
It's not great.
The Watcher helps them, you know, this otherworldly being who's been, and not by like coming in and kicking Galactus's ass, because that's not the Watcher's style. But he does take the Human Torch and send him through all these other universes to find an ultimate weapon, which he then brings back. And they're like, "Hey, Galactus, we're going to set this thing off and destroy the Earth and you, unless you just get the hell out of here." And so Galactus is like, "Oh, that's okay, fine."
You
and
got
so
they, me foiled
so they,
again.
So they give the weapon to Galactus because the Silver Surfer says, you know, when Galactus makes a promise, you can, you know, he's like a force of nature. He can't lie. So they just give him the little weapon and he buggers off to another place. So that seems a little less climactic, but still maybe better than in the Rise of the Silver Surfer movie, when it's all they have to do is convince the Silver Surfer to go up against his master, and then he just sort of unleashes his cosmic power and destroys the drives away or destroys. Like, there is no good solution. I think the solution they came up with in this movie for fighting this ultimate creature was as good, you know, bringing in kaiju elements. I really enjoyed.
I really loved the fact that Galactus came down to fight his own battles and didn't send hordes of faceless minions that the superheroes just had to plow through. I really, really love the fact that when Galactus is coming to get you, he jumps into New York Harbor and just stomps his way through.
I like that too. Now, does he, and this is just a technical note, but does he like shrink or something? Because he, I mean, like, just, I'm just thinking in terms of scale.
No idea. I have no idea what's going on with the physics of this movie. I have no idea.
Oh, because when he's in space, he's a lot bigger.
It feels like he's a lot bigger.
He seems bigger.
But then when he gets into, like, you know, when he's in the harbor or when he's in the water, it seems like it comes up to, what, his knees or something? Like, it doesn't seem...
Yeah, the Statue of Liberty is up to his collarbone.
And the Statue of Liberty, she's not that big. Anyway.
The Rise of the Silver Surfer at least made it plausible that this ship, this being, it's not Galactus, it does not have talk, it does not, it's not a character, could eat the Earth. Like, it is to scale. Whereas, how is this kaiju gonna just jump down, and I guess he's got his ship, he's just gonna just... They don't reveal the mechanics of how he's going to destroy the Earth.
I just assumed he was going to hoover it up. But is the Silver Surfer, is she always a woman or is she usually a man?
No. Usually a man.
CGI Laurence Fishburne. It was a different character.
Okay. I liked her as a woman in this one. I liked her as a mother.
Yeah, she was great.
I'm very happy to hear that you liked something, Sarah.
Did it have to be? So here's a question I wanted to raise for you. I feel like all three of these movies, there is serious overkill in the actor quality. Julia Garner is a wonderful performer, was not necessary for that role.
I agree.
Ralph Ineson, or you know, whatever his name, had two lines. Eben Moss Backrack. In fact, the thing I didn't like about the thing is that he talked normal. I kind of missed the Michael Chiklis, I'm the thing. And this guy's just, hey, I'm the thing.
But that's how he really is. Like, that's how he's supposed to be.
Well,
that's
I don't know. Do we know?
Yeah. I like
if
that.
His voice is supposed to be.
That's how I interpret it. And I think that Julia Garner is going to show up later. So she may have been underserved in this film. But the Silver Surfer is a very major character in Marvel. And so I would be shocked if she doesn't show up later, particularly with Doom coming on the horizon. She should have more there. So maybe there's going to be more coming for her.
She didn't have like loads to do, but she turned in a really, really strong performance. That's already, her performance has already been memeified to hell. Like, there's a very...
I liked her performance a lot.
Yeah.
I actually liked Eben Moss Baccarat too. I liked his performance again. Like, I thought Michael Chiklis was fine too.
Yes.
But I really liked that he just came across in First Steps as kind of a normal guy. I love the fact that they made him clothes and hats and he could grow a beard. I just thought, oh, I would not expect that. But I thought everybody put in, I thought Vanessa Kirby was excellent. Mm-hmm. Who knew you could give birth in space like that? That was also very silly scene.
Yeah, I don't think you can, actually. I don't think that's how it works.
It's a magic baby.
I thought it would be better, right? Isn't it if you, like, giving birth in a hot tub, like that being weightless is a similar experience that it, we should ask a professional.
But you're not weightless in a hot tub, man. Like,
you need gravity.
You need gravity still to push.
My question was not, did these people do a good job? Yes, they did a good job. Do you need actors that are this good for this kind of material? I mean, we should be grateful.
I mean, that's what Marvel does. That's what Marvel does. I mean, Marvel has multiple Academy Award winning actors on their roster. Like, they just do. I mean, Robert Downey Jr., he's won an Oscar. Brie Larson, she won an Oscar. Samuel L. Jackson hasn't, but he should have won one for Pulp Fiction. I mean, so the reality is that they have a lot of heavyweights. And so if they're going to do more with these actors, which I suspect that they will, then I'm okay with them.
And the five stars of the 2015 version, Miles Teller, Michael B. Jordan, Kate Mara, Jamie Bell, Toby Kebbell. I like every single one of them. They are so good in other things.
Yeah.
It just makes you, if the movie ends up not being good, then you're just like, what a waste. What a waste. Yeah. Why is Michael Jordan spending time with this?
That was Trank who wrecked that film. Like, and Trank has never worked, I don't think, ever again. But yeah, he's the one who wrecked that film.
Yeah, if you turn out a bad film and then you...
And he's an asshole, too.
And then he said it was all the studio's fault. And regardless of whether or not it was the studio's fault, it's not a good way to get hired by another studio.
No, passing the buck like that.
You've been through one diet after another, maybe for years. You've counted calories, pushed through workouts, cut carbs, and still the weight came back. It's exhausting. You've been told it's about willpower, but really, it's about science. With Voy's weight loss program, we combine medication with expert support to help you reach your goals. We don't believe in one-size-fits-all solutions. Voy's medication is personalized based on what's right for you. You'll have a full care team behind you, from Voy's clinicians checking in on you to a personal coach keeping you motivated. And with the Voy app, your team is always just a tap away, anytime, anywhere. Join over 100,000 people across the UK already seeing results with Voy at joinvoy.com/podcast.
Unsure if it's right for you? Check your eligibility today at joinvoi.com/podcast. Treatments will only be prescribed if deemed appropriate.
I'm not switching my team to some fancy work platform that somehow knows exactly how we work. And its AI features are literally saving us hours every day. We're big fans. And just like that, teams all around the world are falling for Monday.com. With intuitive design, seamless AI capabilities, and custom workflow, it's the work platform your team will instantly click with. Head to Monday.com, the first work platform you'll love to use.
I just noticed there's so much crossover in, like, Michael B. Jordan has played two Marvel characters. Chris Evans has played multiple Marvel characters. Is that, I didn't even know that was allowed. I mean,
I guess it's the benefit of being in a Marvel bomb.
Yeah.
Because if Chris Evans was the Human Torch in a Fantastic Four film no one cares about, then no one's going to care if he turns up as Captain America again.
Oh my gosh. Can you go back and look at how much that first movie made? Like, you're talking about it like no one watched it. Like, it was very successful.
I am being unfair. But he was a Deadpool joke, so I'm not, like, wildly out of touch.
Chris Evans as Captain America, I think, is such good casting. I think he did such a good job in that and gave that. I would never have predicted that, seeing his performance in Fantastic Four. And again, it's just the character that he was told to play that he is doing to a T. But I just find it so repulsive. And I'll admit that I rewatched these two with the riff tracks on. So every time, like, Chris Evans would, like, storm off, the commentators would be like, yes, leave the movie. Like, they so loathe. So I was a little colored by, you know, these people reflecting the social judgments on these films. But I saw them before in their true form. So, you know, this is not my only experience. One thing I did not see in its true form was the 1994 thing. I just instead watched the documentary Doomed, but I didn't look very hard. Maybe it was on YouTube or something. But you guys are saying that the documentary presents it as everybody was talented.
Yeah.
The filmmakers had the best of intentions. It's just that they had no budget and it became a labor of love. It became basically a fan film that they were, after they'd been told to cease operations, people kept putting their own money into it and pursuing this. And so it was the best it could possibly be for what it was. But it still sounds like a giant heap of cheese. Are you, those of you who have seen it, disagreeing and you actually like this film?
Well, it is a giant heap of cheese. It is a low budget giant heap of cheese. But what's brilliant about it is that Roger Corman set out to make. So the first amazing thing about it is that everybody is making a tax write-off. Well, not a tax write-off. It's like a movie that only exists for legal purposes. But nobody knows that they're only making a movie that exists for legal purposes. So everyone is turning in, like, a real hard day's work because they all think that this is their big break. And Roger Corman, in making his Fantastic Four movie, it is a pile of cheesy garbage, but it is the most efficient pile of cheesy garbage that you ever see. It is an absolute workmanlike craft going into it. So it is not anyone's idea of a fantastic film, but it is a perfectly executed version of a low budget, like, bare bones superhero movie.
So the writing is good.
Not really. Not really, but it's, for instance, there is a plot that is recognizable as a plot that moves from A to B to C. Every character has an arc, which has a... Like, but
that
exactly,
is a low bar,
it
is, man. That is a low
it's
bar.
A every character has an arc with, like, an emotional resolution. None of it's particularly clever or subtle, but it's all there, and it's all recognizable, and it's all... like, everything does the job that it needs to do. And it's just a really interesting artifact as an exercise in making, like, what is the most bare minimum stuff that you need to do in order to say that you are making a superhero movie, and that's what's on screen. It's really interesting, and it's great because everybody is really trying. Like, it's not pathetic or funny. Everyone's really trying, and it's a solid piece of work.
It's very earnest, but it's also not good. it is objectively not a good film.
No.
The writing is not good. The direction's not good. But it is very charming in the way. Have you guys seen The Room? That supposedly terrible movie. It's charming in the way that The Room is charming.
But it's better than The Room.
It's better than The Room. But it's charming in that way, and it's very earnest. And people are really, really trying. And they're trying to do the best they can with production design. They're trying to do the best they can with really all of it. And so since they're trying so hard, I really respect it. And I like it. And honestly, it's quite rewatchable in a strange way. Like, it's like The Room, you can see it once, you're kind of good. This is quite rewatchable. Like, I kind of enjoyed it, you know? So I would say people need to seek it out. It's streaming somewhere. You can find it somewhere.
It's on YouTube.
Is it on YouTube? Yeah. So it's very charming. I think Al has done a good job of laying out why you should watch it. It's very charming. Don't expect a great film. You know, Sarah's going to watch it and hate it because she watched a legitimately good film in, you know, The First Steps, and she didn't like that. So she's definitely not going to like this one.
I think we can safely say she is not going to watch the 1994 version, but I would recommend the documentary.
She's not.
The documentary is a fun thing as documentaries go. Because they, you know, talk to just about to everybody. Roger Corman is still kicking, and or at least at that point.
Is he still around?
Oh, when he dies, we're going to do a hell of an episode on his movies.
He died in May 2024, Al.
Oh, no.
Oh, he's already dead?
He died at age 90. No. At oh, age 98.
Gosh. Oh, my goodness.
He made it a long damn time.
Well, no, we need to do something then. I think we got to do something. No, this is not it, sir. No, don't disrespect Roger Corman. He has a really good history of giving filmmakers, you know, a platform. Like, there would be some filmmakers that we revere now that would not be around if it hadn't been for him. So we need to give him Bennett's flowers.
All right. Any final thoughts on Lawrence was asking, what do you want out of a superhero movie? Sarah was saying she's not watching the next one. I think I should have been spoiled on this, that in the... God damn, I keep forgetting the name of the new Avengers movie. Their soccer
Doomsday?
Team name. No, the one that already came out. It's subtitled The New Avengers.
Thunderbolts?
Yes. The teaser at the end of Thunderbolts is that, oh, there's the Fantastic Four coming into our world. So I just expect, at least in the post-credit scene, that to happen here. And no, you don't get that. That it's just all self-contained. And I wish I knew that going in. I don't feel bad spoiling that because I would have stopped looking for that. So this did not actually answer the question, even though we've had all this set up with the multiverse in some of the other films, mm-hmm. of like how they're getting over here. Are they going to want to stay here? Why would that be a satisfying thing for, instead of staying in their native New York City? Like, I half thought maybe Galactus was just going to destroy that Earth, and that's why they have to come to this Earth. Or that Galactus was going to chase them.
That would have been very interesting, yeah.
That was a Rick and Morty plot. Like, oh, our dimension's destroyed. Let's just go live in another one.
It still would have worked. I still would have liked it.
I'd have liked that version of the film. They're clearly not going to do anything that interesting because they did all the setup of Doctor Doom in this. They were trailing Doctor Doom very heavily in this movie, so they've clearly got to do at least one with him before they... Either they'll pop over to the other universe in between, or they've got to do that one first. I don't know.
Well, Doctor Doom is clearly, I think, a interdimensional traveler, if you look at that last scene of this film.
Oh.
So... You know, because he shows up randomly, and they hadn't established that Dr. Doom was, like, in the world or anything. Like, not really. So, it's something going on with that. But I'm with you, Mark. When I saw the end of Thunderbolts, I expected this movie to end where that one ended, you know what I'm saying? You know, with them coming over. They didn't do that. I don't know why they didn't do that, but they didn't do that. So, we will see what they're going to do. But I'm interested in how they're going to get over into the main, you know, MCU universe. It's going to be really interesting. And of course, we're doing deep geek talk, so sorry for the people who don't like this kind of stuff. But I'm very interested in how they're going to do that, because it kind of doesn't make sense. I don't know why they ended this movie the way they did.
It's just too nice that they wrapped the world that they're in really has basically no troubles. The Fantastic Four have solved all the problems. They've created their worship uniformly, so everybody in the world will be at their beck and call when they say, everybody's got to chip in and make these teleporters right now. That they're all just, we don't need to see the prototype. You moved an egg? That's all we need to see. We believe you implicitly. So it does seem like there is limited dramatic potential in that world, that having them come to our messy world is better.
Yeah, there's a lot of trust in that Jetsons world.
As another podcast I was listening to yesterday pointed out, the MCU, as we know it, already sort of filled in the holes, right? Tony Stark is like finding out about time travel. Like, this is what Mr. Fantastic would have been doing. We fill in. So will it be redundant? I guess Tony Stark is dead. So now we could just replace that. The asynchronous character of some of this is still something that I feel like they'll need to figure out. Like, is Iron Man really going to be dead forever? Is it just going to be Ironheart filling that role or War Machine filling that role? You know, if they're going to say you could have different actors, is it going to be, oh, now we're bringing in Iron Man from a different Earth? So we still want to have the Iron Man character around, but it doesn't have to be Robert Downey Jr. because that's our excuse now for recasting things, is which they didn't do with, you know, General Ross in Thunderbolts, that Harrison Ford came over from another universe. They just because the original actor was dead, who is somebody famous. I'm trying to remember. William Hurt. There you go.
Yeah. Oh,
pretty
yeah.
Sure.
Oh,
I had an idea who that was. Yeah.
Anyway, that, of course, has been the big, I don't think it's specifically like geek talk, Lawrence, because it is the thing that people know about from the business side, right? That, oh, Marvel finally has the rights to these characters. And so it's trying to, that foreign element of still going on with, you know, are we going to see Venom in the Marvel universe? Do we care? The Thunderbolts.
I think that's gone.
The Thunderbolts gone. Was supposed to be in the comics, or like the Dark Avengers, these equivalents, I think were much cooler. It's like, oh, it's Venom pretending to be Spider-Man. It's, you know, they find a sort of an equivalent of all the Avengers and find the evil version of that. And that seems a cool thing, which now they can't do exactly that. All right, maybe this is a little too geek talk.
It's very nerdy, very nerdy. I mean, I can go there with you, but I'm not trying to bore the people who
I'm
listen
so
to
lost. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm lost too now.
I mean, that's just the inherent issue that comic books are even more so than TV shows. Like, Spider-Man has an adventure of the week. So here we're going to, in the Fantastic Four movie, we're just going to refer to it. In fact, they got rid of, apparently, John Malkovich had filmed scenes to be one of the villains in sort of this montage, and they removed him. He was on the cutting room floor. You take out John freaking Malkovich from your film. That's how precious every second of your film is.
He hasn't been big for a while. I just think that this film, it was just undercooked, honestly. Like, let me back that up. That's not true. I would say that it was just too short. It was just too short, and it needed a little bit more room to breathe. Like, even Mole Man, who is a beloved villain, you know, in the Marvel Universe, we don't really know much about him, and we don't know what's going on with that guy. And they drop him in there, and it's a little bit there, but it's not enough. And so I just would have liked more. That's what I'm saying.
How about this? Because they have a whole TV network, they should put their movie out, but then they should have, like, a one-hour special where it's the Fantastic Four fights Mole Man, a one-hour special where he, you know, they do the John Malkovich thing, and they could be as highfalutin. It doesn't have to be a whole series. It could just be like the Werewolf by Night thing where they just have...
That was so good.
Look, here's a thing with some characters that is an hour, hour and a half, even 45 minutes, and fill in these things that you would like to see. The Thing and his existential crisis, you know?
Yeah.
Surely you can afford to get that actor back for one little thing.
No, that would be great, because it's such a range of stories that you could tell with these characters. I mean, Lawrence made a really good point miles earlier when he was talking about the sci-fi roots of Fantastic Four as a kind of storytelling device. Where I first knew and loved Fantastic Four from I guess, 90s TV cartoon incarnation, and that was very much, you know, space adventures, one week leads on to the next. And that's a great kind of storytelling for Fantastic Four. I hope Marvel starts taking more and more advantage of the different kind of formats of storytelling that they have access to. Like we saw with how good Andor was as an exercise in Star Wars storytelling. One benefit of the death of cinema as an industry is going to be that there stops being this pressure to cram every single kind of superhero story that you want to tell into a feature film length release. You could do lots of other interesting stuff with them.
I guess a final topic that I forgot to bring up. What do we want out of this? It should be a good action film.
Yeah.
And when you have an ensemble, that their whole point is that we are stronger together than apart. So here we get one fight scene, which is a very special with Galactus. And we see that apparently Sue Storm's power is so massive that she could just basically do everything by herself. What is the Thing supposed to do? Oh, well, Galactus got his jacket caught in a building, and so the Thing has to knock the building down just to, like, clear the... Like, that seems so gratuitous. I feel like the Avengers Endgame did a wonderful job with this. I feel like the Guardians of the Galaxy, I think does pretty, yeah. They have these like slow motion action scenes. Like we actually care about the action. In this one, it was more about the drama than the action. And so we just did not get to see enough of like how the pieces would work together. Even the X-Men Colossus is going to pick up Wolverine and throw him like a football. Like that's the kind of thing that I want to see out of a super team. And I feel like I did not get that. This was not, as an action movie, it does not measure up to so many of the others.
But the fan, oh my gosh.
Are you saying they're not at core an action team?
They're not. No, they're a sci-fi world hopping, exploring kind of team. And yeah, there are action elements, but it is far more interested. They've always been far more interested. And going even back to the Jack Kirby, Stan Lee kind of being over it, they've always been more interested in the cosmic ethical dimensions of space and stuff, as opposed to like hardcore action. And so this is very much in line with what the Fantastic Four have always been. So I was fine with it. It's not the X-Men. It's not the Avengers. It's the Fantastic Four. And they gave you what the Fantastic Four have always been.
Even though their individual powers are basically X-Men powers.
Yeah.
Like they could be in the X-Men.
Yeah.
But they're supposed to all be scientists, and scientists don't just like, I work with scientists. They don't just run around and do shit and like fight people. Like scientists are like scientists. And so these guys are supposed to be either scientists or scientist adjacent. And so I was very fine with that. They've always been this way.
You know what, though? I couldn't help but compare this, obviously, with The Incredibles by Pixar.
Well, The Incredibles are a spinoff of that, yeah.
Definitely felt like they were inspired by it. But their family dynamic, they are working together, and you can see how all of the pieces of the puzzle come together. And I would have liked to see more of that in Fantastic Four, but maybe that's not how it is in the comics. I'm just, you know, I'm not really sure. It did seem like they were all kind of individuals.
Not really. I mean, they work together, but they're not swashbucklers. Like, that's just not how they are. You know, they come together and they fight when they need to, but that's just not how they kind of operate. Not really. It depends on which run you're looking at, but as a rule, not really. That's not exactly what they do.
Was this a change to say, I brought, you know, the three best scientists that I knew who also happened to be my family into space with me? I thought it was just Reed Richards, who is a scientist. That's the other versions of the Fantastic Four. The Thing is just like his friend. It's not, it's his, basically his bodyguard, not like, oh, they're all super geniuses. Oh, the Human Torch, he can decode a language by himself. Yeah. He doesn't need to use the AI or anything.
Isn't the Thing, he's a pilot, I believe, you know, so, you know, and there are pilots who go into space. I mean, you know, it's supposed to be a little bit more heady.
Sure.
That's what they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's wrap this up. Thanks for being so fantastic. You audience, all four of you out there listening, we really appreciate it.
I believe there's more than four of you out there. There's at least 10 of you there.
Some of us, and there's at least 10 people, yes, that will hear. If people are amenable, we will talk a little more about future topics and other things that we've been watching in the After Talk. Go to patreon.com/prettymuchpop. To get that, and that will remove any experience of commercials from your regular listening here. So come on, you might as well do that. All right, thanks everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye, thank you.
Pretty Much Pop is part of the Partially Examined Life podcast network. Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop.